Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so Tatpaya Lingas. See, is the followers of the Vedic culture, they write according to the Panchanga Nyaya. So since they write according to Panchanga Nyaya, therefore it can be analyzed according to Tatpaya Lingas, right? Does this make sense? It's a natural way of looking at it. So they connect to each other. It's the same thing. One is just, how do you say? One is looking to find what is there. From there one can find, you know, its structure and what its main themes are. Right, going through again upakramana and upasamhara, that the beginning and end, the opening and closing of something is always going to reflect what the theme is, right? Because someone will always discuss things according to that. That will always be the principle, right? Abhyasa, repetition, that something that's brought up again and again, it's important. That's why the person discussing it, you know, will, means that's how you notice. Someone keeps coming back to the same point, right? Then you start to see that there's some, you know, some importance there, some main theme is there. Then apurvata, uniqueness, that how you bring it out in a special way or make it unique amongst what is being presented, so you understand this is special, so that also then establishes that as the theme. Phala, the object of fruit, what is the result? So by giving the result, then you understand that this is means the work was going to get you that result. So that result's important. That's the thing. The method to get it is important. Right? And then artavad means you're going to glorify something, because anything that you consider that you glorify, then that makes it important, right? That makes it stand out, that makes it your theme there. And then upapati, logicality, if they must be, how you say? So if you're establishing something through reason, you're going through many, many steps, and that then brings you to some kind of like a conclusion, then you can understand what is comes at that conclusion, that's what's important, right? Not the steps you went through, right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, then one may get distracted at something, and you think it's one thing when it's actually another, right? Because so many of these things, you're going to give an example of something. So the example is not what's important. The thing that you're giving an example about is important, right? That you're establishing logic, then what is the conclusion of that? That's what's important. Does that make sense? So all these show different angles of the same thing. Right? You're trying to understand the theme. So all these different aspects then are to bring out, because you're going to have logic used. You're going to have examples used. You're going to have glorification or specialness or repetition used to bring out that point. So this will give you an idea how to catch that, right? Because you can technically you can apply this on anything. It's not just on Vedic, only something is written according to Panchanga Nyaya. Right. And in this is that you may not have all of them present in one work. The work may be very simple, very short, so sometimes you can't find all of these. But in any case, if you can find any of them, you can tell what's special. Now, if you're talking to somebody and they keep bringing up the same point, there wasn't an opening and closing necessary, then you know there's something special about why they're bringing this up. That must be on their mind. You know, if they say, wow, I saw this today, it was so great, it was so, you know, like that, you know, it's special, therefore it's there. You know, or they're talking about, you know, this was so nice, and that was this, that, then that's special. That's the main point of the conversation. Does that make sense? Or they're going in, well, you know how, you know, we did this, and then you said that, and then after that this happened, and then that happened, so therefore I was thinking, so what that is what's important, because they've gone through logical steps to get to it. You understand? So in any case, you know, or opening a conversation, you start about something and then you close with that. So this way you can tell whatever it is you're dealing with, what's important, what's the main theme. Does that make sense? Okay.
Analogies also will be the Upapati.
Say again?
Analogies, like analogy.
Yeah, you could probably say that. You're using it, but at the same time, you'd have to see what kind of analogy it is. Mm-hmm. You know? But it could be just you're giving so many analogies on the same point, so that that point is again brought up again and again. Then that could bring it out there. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
Here, the Purvata is an example of Tattvamsi.
Of Purvata. Unique.
The truth revealed by the Mahavakya is the approach. For this statement cannot be known by any other means of knowledge. So how is this refers to a Purvata? Because a Purvata is something which is mentioned for the first time.
No. A Purvata is uniqueness. But he says for the first time means it's unique, it hasn't been brought out before. Right? It may be a new way of presentation. It doesn't mean that it's only one, so then when he repeats it. But here the thing is this has been used so many times, right? Means it's mentioned here 9 times in this Chandogya Upanishad. So therefore by abhyas, right, repetition, you know it's special, but then at the same time as they're trying to bring out it, see, as the background information is so much may be there, so therefore that's what then makes it special. You're bringing so much information from something and then trying to establish that, so then this is something that's new being established. It means new in this work, or it can be new even in other works.
Mahavakya presented in a new way, or
that could be, or just that this point is made as a Mahavakya. We don't accept Tattvamasi as a Mahavakya. It may be an important point, or it may be a Purvata in the Chandogya, but to us it's not a Mahavakya. We only use the term Mahavakya because probably most of the Indians and most of the Hindus in India will call it one. Right? I am that. You know, what's so special about it? You know what I'm saying? I am Brahman. That's pretty common. So we don't take that as a Mahavakya. Like that, right? But we're calling it one here for the discussion because everybody else calls it that. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say, you have an ambassador. Okay? The car. So, because of its being used in that, it means by general definition, they call it a car, right? But if you know what cars are, you might not call it a car. You know, it's more of a tin can with 4 wheels on it. They're all that, of course, but the quality of tin can is greatly different. You know what I'm saying? You know, you show up with something on 2 wheels and it's not very well put together, and then you say, what, you call that a bicycle? It is a bicycle. You know what I'm saying? So people are calling this a Mahavakya even though it's not. Right? Shankara uses this because he's trying to bewilder people. So he's taking something that's not and making it special, making it unique. Does that make any sense? Okay. Anything else?
Just for understanding, mm-hmm. can we say that, you know, when Srila Prabhupada introduced Krishna consciousness in the West, can we say that Apurvata?
Introduce Krishna consciousness in the West? Yes, you can. Because it's different. It's different than anybody's presenting, different than has been brought out. So therefore we can see that that's important. Hare Krishna is repeated many times, so we can understand that that's the important. Yeah. So now as example of broad usage of it, that's not specifically something that's read, I mean, according to, that's written according to the Panchanga Nyaya or anything like that, just some kind of modern statement. According to this system, passages that are of utmost importance are to be accepted in full, while preliminary or supporting portions are to be viewed in light of the points they are meant to establish. Before speaking about a new concept, the Shastras tell us about things known to us in practical life and are secondary importance. This is anuvad, and it leads to apurvata. Right? In other words, all those things that you're discussing to get to a point, those are what is here, what do you call it?
Anuvad
means that they are secondary. Anu means small, right? So it's the secondary importance. What you're trying to establish, that's of primary importance. So that's why it's important to know what is the theme, what are the main points, right? So that's why the Tatparyalinga is used. Then you know how that's main, everything else is interpreted in connection with that, right? Everything else has that aspect. The Shastras may contain stories told to impress upon us the importance of a concept. The injunctions with which these stories are associated must be accepted in full. But the stories themselves may not require to be brought into observance. Right? Therefore, that point that the Bhagavatam is full of analogies or, you know, like that, therefore it's not actually real, then means that that is a, you know, how you say it? That's defeated by this point, that the analogy is there to make a point, right? So to say that Bhagavatam has so many analogies in it, in like Paranjana, and therefore it's not real, so therefore we don't have to accept the Vedic culture because it's not real, right? Does that make sense? You're trying to make a point. Right? Paranjana is, you know, your absorption in material life, no matter how expert, is still a problem. You have to somehow or another come to the transcendental platform. Right? Does that make sense? So the story of Paranjana is not as important as the point being made. But the story itself is a very nice way of making the point. Therefore, it can be used. Therefore, it's appreciated. This is the method of artavad. Thus, anuvad and artavad are meant to bring us to the ultimate purpose or message of the shastra. All right? So, eulogistic condemnatory. Yeah. Yeah, so you're telling a story, something becomes praised, or something becomes criticized. That's what the story was for. So the anuvad, which is going to bring out, means in the story what's brought out, or... I mean, it was that artavad, and the anuvad means what's going to lead up to making the point of apurvata. Does that make sense? So both of these are a lot of your fill, right? Or the logical sequence of establishing your point by upapati. Does that make sense? So this way you're going to get the work itself then becomes expanded because of these three. Does that make sense? The logical presentation, right, and the various the points being made to establish a point, or the stories being told to establish a point. Right? That makes sense, right? Because we see it in the Panchanga Nyaya that giving examples then is a major part of the thing. That's the third part. But that may make a lot by bulk, right? The thesis is one sentence, right? Generally, its expansion or explanation is also a few sentences, Then you go on to establish logically the thing, to tell the different stories, to bring out the thing, go through, you know, so many logical steps to get to pointing it out, or any combination. Does that make sense? Here's an example of an essay which illustrates the usage of Tatparya Linga. So this is an analysis here. First paragraph. Political correctness is an attitude often adopted by contemporary men. However, to achieve the ultimate goal of life, or for that matter any goal in life, one must have a commitment. Why are people often afraid to commit themselves to a goal, lifestyle, or philosophy? It is due to fear. Fear of failure, fear of losing what one has, fear of the consequences in making a decision. Oh, and fear of taking a stand. Second paragraph. One may be unable to make a commitment because one is afraid of not succeeding. The person may wonder what will happen if one fails. Of course, no one wants to fail, but if one fails, it is not the end of the world either. If one fails, one can always try harder next time. So there's no real need for political correctness. Third, the alternative or outcome of not making a commitment is to continue without a direction in life or simply being politically correct. Right? Because we're taking political correctness means that what's correct today, tomorrow it changes. Therefore, there's no commitment. That's the point that's being made. It's not talking about that you're by etiquette speaking properly in the situation. We're talking about the mentality that one's standards of viewpoints or perspectives changes with vox populi, right? As the mass that you consider important changes its viewpoint, you change yours, right? The alternative or outcome of not making commitment is to continue without a direction in life, or simply being politically correct. The fact that one is not able to make a commitment will bother one. Therefore, it is better to take the plunge and commit oneself to a goal and give up political correctness. One's whole life is a commitment. Living is a commitment. Study is a commitment. Right, commitment's being mentioned many times here. The Vedic culture is a culture of commitment. Political correctness is a way of illustration allowing us to think that we are free from commitment. Right, so here now, political correctness is being brought out, but we can see it's being brought out in the negative. Right? So it's an important point here, but the actual point is not to be politically correct, it's to avoid it, to actually commit yourself to a standard. Fourth, in the Ramayana, King Dasarath told his queen, Kaikeyi, that she should ask him for any boon she desired. At the time of Rama's coronation, Kaikeyi encased her boon by asking that Ram be sent to the forest, or encashed. Upon hearing Kaikeyi's words, Dasarath said to Ram, "It is I who have given a word to Kaikeyi, but you have a right to refuse to go to the forest." Lord Ram could have tried to wiggle out of trouble by the means of political correctness. However, he did not give himself to weakness, as he was a powerful king. Rama chose to honor his father's words, and so he went to the forest. He sanctified the kingdom which rightfully belonged to him. Oh, he sacrificed the kingdom which rightfully belonged to him for the sake of a commitment to the queen, a commitment to the given word above political correctness. This story in the Ramayana praises a life of commitment. Fifth paragraph. Only by committing oneself to a goal is one able to achieve anything in life. Freeing oneself from political correctness and committing to higher goals gives a meaningful life. Okay, so now we see here is that the first and the fifth, right? The first one, political correction is an attitude adopted, right? But for any matter, any goal, one must have a commitment, right? So people are afraid of things, therefore they're worried what will be the outcome. And they don't want to be standing in the wrong place. So they don't want to experience anything uncomfortable at any time. So they leave their options open that they can wiggle out of anything at any time. Right? So we see here is that it's it's being pointed out that this is not a good stand to take. Right? So one should be committed. One should, you know, properly, you know, have proper goals in life. One should be committed to them. Right? So we can see that's the theme, because that's the opening and closing of this work. Right? And so then the abhyas, what is being constantly repeated? Right? What gets the most repetition?
Commitment.
Commitment, right? So that's what's being brought out. So that was in the first. Right? Commitment, you know, but commitment is the, you know, the single word that you use, but that means commitment to, you know, appropriate standards and goals in life, right? So don't be wishy-washy, right? That's this, it is there, okay? Then what is the result that is being given? That by commitment, what will you get?
Success.
Success.
Meaningful life.
Meaningful life, yes. You'll? Yes, you'll achieve goals, right? So this is then what's being given, right? By commitment, then you're going to have a meaningful life which you'll be able to actually attain your goals that you're looking for. Other things you won't be able to, right? Then, fourth, what is the artavat and eulogy, glorification by eulogistic or condemnatory passages? Okay, so which is what is glorified, what is condemned?
Political correctness is condemned. Commitment is glorified.
Is glorified, right? Okay, so then that we understand from there. And then, what is the illustration used in this passage? What is the logic?
Lord Ramachandra's.
Right, Lord Ramachandra's. And what is it trying to point out? So is the story of Ram the main point it's trying to bring out?
Is that he was not...
No, called? That he was not going to stand on political correctness. He was going to stand on actual dharma, right? Does that make sense? Okay, yes.
Maharaj, here it says that he didn't, you know, you're also mentioning that people, they keep themselves open to legal line on any side. So
they keep themselves open to?
You know, it means they can just change sides?
So yes.
Wiggling?
Wiggle out of anything.
Yeah, wiggle out. So that can that be considered under the, you know, one of the four defects of human beings, to commit, you know, to cheat others and get cheated?
Can be. It could fall into cheating. One could be sincere in one's political correctness and actually think it's a proper stand. You know, someone situated in pranamoy, he gets all his knowledge from others. So because of this, then he then thinks. He then thinks that this kind of platform is actually good, because in other words, what people feel and think, that is important, right? So that's basically a stand of philosophy, a pranamoyic philosophy. So they may be sincere in that, helping others, being nice to others, that's good. So they'll take that as a stand. And then from there, but the problem is because it doesn't have a basis in actual nature. Therefore, it's a problem because it's changeable. Because generally, if we look at it, political correctness, what is the means correctness is there, that's a good, that's that can be considered nice. But what's the other word used?
Political.
Political. But somehow or another, because you use correctness, then the term politically correct becomes politically correct. Previously, the word for political correctness was diplomacy, right? Because you, but now it's, oh, diplomacy is bad because that's motivated and that's just, so what's your political correctness? It's also motivated, it's just the same thing, different word. Does that make sense? So, like that, we have to be very, very careful, you know, is that, yeah. So the point is that here is that you're looking at Ram could have gone on the popular thing. His father didn't want him to go, the other moms didn't want him to go and all that, so he could go by that. And then find some very nice way to spin doctor it and then, you know, get out of it. Because his father's making the point. I committed that you would go to the forest, but that's not your determination. You don't have to follow it, because if you go to the forest, you're the Yuvaraj, who's going to run the kingdom? Right? But he's working on the principles, no, Father is the authority. He's made a statement. I follow that statement. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Being diplomatic means on how nicely you present something. That's fine. You know? So the element of speaking something in a way that's palatable, that's fine. But to take it as a philosophy, that's bogus. You understand? Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha are all part of the devotee's, cultural lifestyle. But to make a philosophy out of it, that's a problem. Does that make sense? You know, because otherwise people just pick on certain things, external things. And because of that, then they reject something. But what about the content of what someone's trying to say? Right? So if all you have is that political correctness is what stands, that's all you have. You don't have a life. You know what I'm saying? You talk about life. Because on Pranamoya, you're naturally going to talk about life, because prana, others, right? You get your knowledge from others, you're worried about others, so it seems like it's progressive. It's better than Anamoya. But it cannot be used against Manamoya, against Dharma. That's foolishness. Right? Because one has extended sense gratification to others, therefore has elevated it. You know, the selfishness to selfishness concerning others. So therefore you consider it special because you can't stretch it anymore. Right? It doesn't go farther than that. But then there's something beyond that. And because they can't see what's beyond it, therefore then they'll say it doesn't exist. Right? Varnashram doesn't exist because he can't follow it now. Why? Because it's beyond their perception. They can't perceive it. Does that make sense? Because their consciousness does not go beyond Pranamoya. Does that make sense? Like that. Oh, it's all there's one. Does this make sense? Anything else? Okay, so the next aspect of this logic, in other words, we're dealing with things that are logical presentation, that our discussions, our presentations, our analyzations are going to be based on. So now we've done the Panchanga Nyaya and the Tatparya Lingas. So now also another form of logical presentation is grammar. So if you come from a language other than English, you're at an advantage because your language most likely follows some grammar, some actual grammar. In other words, you have grammar, then you have, you know, how it's presented. Unfortunately, English doesn't have any grammar. It's an art. It's a mix of all the varieties of languages, and it's basically a street language that then, for those who have an affection for the language, then they try to find some, basis for it. Does that make sense? I mean, not that that's not a noble or useful cause. We're just saying they have to start with an art and work backwards and create a grammar for it, right? Just like a dictionary. The common person takes the dictionary as the authority of the word. But those who the lexicographers, those who write the dictionaries, they take the usage of the word on the street and then document that in a dictionary. Right? That's why you can see words that didn't exist before in dictionaries or the use of the word changing. Does that make sense? So, language, basically speaking, is establishing means communicating. It's one form of communicating, communication in a relationship. Okay? So the idea is that because Krishna has established relationship, because he's expanded, therefore there's a need to communicate. Right? If you're going to taste rasa, there has to be some medium to communicate through. So language is a very powerful means of communication. We see also there's music, there's drama, dance, so many other arts that are there that are also used in communication. You know, or to, you know, taste rasa. But language is a very prominent one, right? And then the scriptures, you're dealing with communication, with language. So then, in here, we're dealing with, it's based on rasa. So you're going to have the subject, which is the one performing an activity, an object upon who the activity is being performed, right? The activity itself is a verb, right? So this is your basis, your core of language, subject, object, and the verb. In other words, the noun and the verb, right? So those objects you can observe, those are nouns. Then the verb is the action that's taking place, you know, between nouns, right? So basically there's six primary nouns that are then connected all around, that are directly connected to the verb. This makes sense? The six kinds of nouns that are connected to the verb. So these are your primary nouns, so basically all your grammar works through this. Right? Then you have six secondary nouns, like that, so many other things like that. Six forms of the verbs, and six forms of, I think, words that are transferring between being a noun to a verb or a verb to a noun. So in this way you get 24 parts of the speech. But for us, for the logic, we're going to mainly deal with the verb itself and the six nouns connected to it, right? So you have the subject and object, that's your main where things are happening. We're connected with the verb, okay? So that's two. Then the instrument will be what is assisting the subject in applying the verb. Right? Does that make sense? Then the subject applying the verb on the object, there will be some result, right? Some phala will be there. So that is the dative. Right. Okay. Now, why would the subject be applying the verb on the object? There must be some cause, some reason, some history. So that is your ablative. Right. The object also can be called the accusative. Right. So you have subjective, objective, or I think accusative. Be either one of them.
Nominative
is?
Subject.
Yeah, so the subject is the nominative, the object is the accusative. Okay. That makes sense. Then dative is your result. Ablative means your cause for it, the background, or where the action is starting from. In other words, it's the origin of the action. So whether it's a history of it or just a beginning place. Right? Krishna started from Nandagaon for the forest. So Nandagaon becomes the ablative, where it started from. Or it could be because Krishna wanted to meet the cowherd boys, therefore he left Nandagram and went to the forest. Right? So in any case, Nandagaon is the ablative. Then you're going to have the locative, means all this action has to take place somewhere. Right? It doesn't just take place in that nice cloud in the sky with the Om song. Right? That may not mean anything to you, but if you've been around the locality for a while, then every Hindu has a little picture of Krishna in the cloud with an Om sign, and sometimes there's Radha and Krishna in the cloud with an Om sign. Right? The Om is there, and the cloud is there, and Krishna is in between them all. It's all one, and all that kind of thing. Okay, does this make sense? on this. So if your language has all these parts, then you're at an advantage. You know, you may already think like this. If you're not, English is your language, then it may be more of a trouble to think in this way. But otherwise, sometimes it's very easy to express something, especially elements of rasa, through grammatical logic. Right? Because you can say what's going on. An example would be, you have Radha and Krishna. So Krishna is the subject, Radharani is the object. So he's performing his pastimes with Radharani. Who's assisting that? Right? The instrumental. That's the jivas. Right? So the point is the jivas are always assisting. They never are the subject. Does that make sense? So through grammar we can establish the position of the jiva. Then if you understand, I'm always the instrument. Right? And the result is not mine. Right? The subject performed the activity, got the result. The result technically belongs to the subject. It's not the instrumentals. Therefore, the jiva, whatever action he performs, is only assistant in the God's pastimes, and the result is always belongs to God. That's just our position. Right? Does that make sense? Right, and the ablative, it'll always be because it starts with the subject. It's the subject that establishes the ablative. So it is for his purpose, for his pleasure, that this pastime is going on, not mine. Right? And the place also is established by the subject. So the jiva is not the one to establish these things. Does this make sense? Okay? You understand? So this will be used sometimes, occasionally, like that. So are there any questions on any of these things that we've discussed up to now? Right? The Panchanga Nyaya, Tatparya Lingas, or this grammar? Anything? No? Okay. So that finishes the first three lessons then. Right? Okay. You had a question? No. So now next thing that we go into is now actual the study of the philosophy. So we're going to start with this element of how Sambandhavideya and Prayojana is established as the Dasa Mool. Right? So this Dasa Mool then is something that Lord Chaitanya would establish. But it was only documented by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Right? So he documents this thing, but he gives example that it was used by everybody. It was just understood they even used the term Dasa Mool. But somehow or another, no one ever documented it, because Lord Chaitanya gave it, everybody just discussed it. But no one, you know, it's just like, has anybody documented, you know, the exact, you know, shape and, you know, construct of a bead bag? No. Does every devotee have one? Yes. So that's an example of something that's so prominent and just so natural, no one thinks to document it because, you know, but if you were in a place where nobody had a bead bag and then they know they should use a bead bag, then what do they do? So someone has to document it. Does that make sense? So that's the way it was, is that everybody accepted and followed and practiced this. But just only Bhaktivinoda Thakur then felt it was important to write down because it was being lost or misunderstood. Right? So in this that you're going to be dealing with Sambandhavideya and Prayojana. And the Sambandhavideya Prayojana, then part of the element of Sambandha means in establishing the points, because the main topic of Sambandha is the Lord, the Jiva, and material energy. Right? This is given in Gita as this is knowledge. Right? So this is Sambandha Gyan. So this Sambandha Gyan must be based on authority. Therefore, you're going to have shabda, or authority, as your first point of the dasa mool. Right? So you have authority. Based on authority, then you're going to have the establishment of what is the nature of Godhead, the nature of the jiva, and the nature of the material world. And then what is their relationship? Okay? And that then your sambandha is established. So that is done through 1 point of shabda and 7 points of sambandha in this. Right? Shabda is part of it, but we're just saying, or let us say, yeah. Then you have 1 for abhideya, 1 for prayojana, right? Because main thing we're trying to do is establish the philosophy. Right? That practice is accepted. We're not getting to the fine point of the practice. Right? The analyzation of that. So this means then how it's divided is that you have one, you have praman, or evidence, and you have prameya, that which is established through that evidence. Right? So 1 praman, 9 prameyas. Right? Does that make sense? Now this is also Madhvacharya. He also establishes the Navaprameyas, but he accounts Shabda as one of them. So why? Because he's leaving out the element of rasa. Because when you're arguing with Mayavadis and this and that, there's no question of discussing rasa. You're just trying to discuss that there is such a thing as existence, you know, in relationships. So he's not even getting, they don't even accept relationship, let alone the rasa derived from it. Therefore, in that presentation, there's only 9 forms. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like that. Because you're establishing just the principles. Once it's been accepted, then the 10 is used. So Vedanta Sutra basically works off the Navaprameyas. Bhagavad Gita as an Upanishad works off of these Navaprameyas. The Upanishads is Navaprameyas. They don't really describe rasa, right? Bhagavatam is dasamul because it describes rasa, right? But it's the same points and they're given by the same person. The difference is Navaprameyas or Lord Chaitanya speaking that to Madhvacharya, while the dasamul is Lord Chaitanya speaking to his associates. Does that make sense? So any questions on this?
I have one back from the grammar.
Okay, one back from the grammar.
When we talk about
Vishaya... Is one before the grammar? You said one back from the grammar, or you mean one...
One back from here.
One, comma, back from the grammar. Means one...
Back to the
grammar. Oh, one back, meaning one back from what is now. Okay. So this is why grammar is important, because depending on where you put the, you end up with different.
My question is about the Vishaya and the Ashraya. Do you consider the Vishaya to be the object, generally?
Yes, the Vishaya is the object, the Ashraya is the subject.
Right. And the six now.
I mean the object, yeah, excuse me. The Vishaya is the subject, the Ashraya is the object.
Okay, in all circumstances. Because I just
yes.
think of Vishaya, at least in the Gita, it's sense object is a Vishaya. So in this case...
But that's on the gross platform.
Right.
The Vishaya is not a sense object. The Vishaya is the one who contains the body of rasa that the Ashraya draws a particular rasa from. Right? In other words, the Vishaya is the enjoyer. The Ashraya is the one enjoy. Does that make sense?
Right. But you were also saying that when we try to seek pleasure out of a sense object, we're actually trying to take pleasure from Krishna that's in that object, that's rasa. So that sense object then is...
Yes, but we're working in the passive.
Yeah.
This is not active, this is passive. In other words, you're working in the accusative case, right? Mm-hmm. And you notice in modern literature, when you go to school, they try desperately to get you to never write anything in accusative case. Right? You always have to write in subjective.
They always want it direct because they desperately want to establish themselves as the controller.
Like active versus passive.
Yeah, active voice, right? Because active voice means the subject.
Yeah.
Passive voice means the object.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they hate the passive voice. When before it was considered, you know, a very nice ornament in writing, because people were more comfortable in relationships than that. But because now they don't have relationships, therefore they don't want to be in a passive state. They want to be the active one because they want to control the environment. Thinking from that, that they will be able to make themselves more secure. Therefore, otherwise, what's wrong with the passive case?
Consider more bureaucratic, like it's actually
it's bureaucratic, and you tell me that, you know, in school it's so direct. That lecturer gets up there and BS's for how long? He could have said it in how many minutes? But if he doesn't do that, then does he get paid? So where is all this and what's wrong with bureaucracy? Everybody works by it. That school that you work in, that you go to school in, how big is that bureaucracy? Right? Does it cost $30,000 a year to get educated? No. What are you taking care of? The bureaucracy. Okay. They don't tax schools. You know, how much does it take to mow the lawn or to water the ivy on that 200-year-old building? So where's the expense? Right? A little electricity? You know, something is going, you know, it shouldn't be, but it's going towards paying the teachers. You add up, you know, paying the teachers and the electricity, you know, the teachers that you or teach you, you know, and then how much does it cost? Yeah, you're in a lecture hall, 300 students, one lecture. You know what I'm saying? So that means take his salary and divide it by 300. Education is pretty cheap. So what is bureaucracy? So why they're fighting against that? Can it just be said, why does it have to be bureaucratic? Why would they have to look at it in that way? Why can't they just say it's, you know, more poetically presented?
The argument given, you know, Strunk and White, the elements of style, says that it's a less direct and less obvious means of communicating, for example.
Yes, and so he say your face is just like the moon.
Yeah.
So Strunk and White would say that's bogus.
Well, I guess the example he kind of uses, you could say Bob dropped the ball, or the ball was dropped, but it doesn't actually indicate who's responsible.
Yes, well, what if you don't want to show who's responsible? What if you want to bring out something? So therefore, all those thrillers on the shelf and all those mysteries and all that, they should all be burned because Strunk and White thinks that they're wrong. You know what I'm saying? And so what is Strunk and White talking about? Every form of communication should follow this?
Yeah, omitting all unnecessary words.
So why do we need Strunk and White? Why do we need? Because they'll say, well, they're the two. There's so many others that are involved. If somebody didn't pay for the book, there would be no book. Someone didn't edit it, it wouldn't be there. If someone didn't lay it out, it wouldn't be happening. So why only Strunk and White? Why not Strunk, White, you know, Smith, you know, Edwards, Williams, you know, George, and you know, Fitzgerald. You know what I'm saying? So what do they mean? What's wrong with it? So that means, and most likely if you check, both Strunk and White aren't married. Or if they were, they're divorced. Or maybe the two of them are gay and they figured out how to, you know, live together because, you know, they can't live with women. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like if you wanted to tell Mr. Strunk and White what you think about the book, you think, well, you know, it's very nice, it brings out this and that, but I feel that this area, you know, we could, you know, develop more. So they would be against that. You should go up to Mr. Strunk and White, I think your book sucks because, you know, it doesn't do this. And they would go, this is a good speaker. You know what I'm saying? So that means all the classics, all the other things that they're going to use in the book, in there. So then what literature does Strunk and White say is good literature that you should be teaching kids in school? Because anything old will use so much of this passive. So then all that has to be thrown out. All the classics have to be thrown out. And somehow or another, the classics have lasted for thousands of years. Come back in 50 years and you see who's ever even heard of Strunk and White. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. It may be good if you want to make your point clear, then you don't want to use the passive voice. But if you want to use it to lead into something or to create some mystique or to soften, then the passive voice is important. In fact, they got it down to passive and active, two voices. In Sanskrit, there's 9 voices. So that means you have subjective voice, you have objective voice, you have dative voice, you have ablative voice, locative voice. You have the verbal voice, right? You have possessive voice. That's what
genitive,
is it?
Huh? Genitive and vocative.
Yeah, and then you have that also. You have the vocative voice. You have all of those verbs. That verb and those nouns have voices. And in Sanskrit, they use them all. And so here, English is left with 2 out of 9. And they're trying to get rid of 1 of them. And maybe if you want to make your point clear, yes. But to say that you can't use it, then that's not very, very good. And when was Strunk and White?
50s.
Yeah, 50s. So who can say now that that's standard? Why should something from the 50s be standard now for a modern man? Nobody talks straight now, so the normal language that people use on the street is either grossly direct or very indirect. So they still use both voices, just more extreme, not so pleasant. So you're not going to get out of 2 voices. Because even the 9 can be categorized according to passive or active. You'll have 7 and 2. But they can't distinguish between the kinds of active or the kinds of passive. Therefore, English is not that developed of a language. Quite expressive, but that's why it's so difficult, because it's not very scientific. Yeah? Okay, so let's go.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai.